Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into the Patriots Talk Podcast. I am Tom Curran. In the next half hour or so, we're going to have, as always, Matt Cassel in to talk all things Patriots. And we'll also put a bow on the very messy Antonio Brown situation. So it'll be wrapping paper, really poorly done, with a messy bow on top. All that and more on the Patriots Talk Podcast.
Adam Vinatieri, move to the 40, Patriots time, world champion, and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
All right, again, thanks for being here. First things first, before we get to Matt, I want to kind of go through the Antonio Brown situation and let you know what I know and have come to understand about how things went down with him on Friday after his threatening texts came to light, because we've gotten more news that continues to dribble and dribble and dribble out relative to Antonio Brown. Early in the morning, on Friday, after Robert Klemko's story in Sports Illustrated was shared, the Patriots immediately, by about 5 in the morning, had convened conversations. Robert Kraft was out of town. He was in Colorado. And Jonathan Kraft was here in Boston. And those conversations began. As the day went along, obviously Bill Belichick was involved too. By the time the afternoon rolled around, and the Patriots had practiced after Bill Belichick had met with the media, I was told the unanimous decision was to move on from Antonio Brown. So there was no great debate, no push-pull. There was, as I said, unanimity between all sides that push had come to shove with Antonio Brown, and he had done something under the Patriots' guidance that was beyond the pale. Now, as for Tom Brady, he wanted Antonio Brown to play football for the Patriots. He understood the team was in a situation where they were wafer-thin wide receiver, and that adding one of the best players in the National Football League at that position was going to make his life drastically better and increase the chances the team was going to win a crap load of games and perhaps a 7th world title. That's all changed now. And when Antonio Brown went out the door, Tom Brady, who wanted Antonio Brown here, who really doesn't ask for much, I've been told, who basically goes along and takes what's given to him, he wasn't that psyched. Again, I don't know if he registered an opinion as to whether or not Antonio Brown had only himself to blame, but he was happier when Antonio Brown was here than he is now that he's gone. And you could almost hear that when he sat with Jim Gray, or actually called in with Jim Gray, during the Westwood One interview on Monday Night Football. Here's Brady's answer to a question about Antonio Brown.
Well, I think there's always reports and speculation about a lot of things that I have said or have not said or been a part of. The reality is I don't make any personnel decisions. I don't decide to sign players. I don't decide to trade them. I don't decide to release them. I don't decide to draft them. I don't get asked. I show up and I do my job. I'm an employee like everyone else. I'm going to show up this week and do the best I can do as quarterback. Maybe one day I will be an owner and I can make all the decisions that I want, but I would probably have to play another 20 years in the NFL to be able to afford that.
It was reported and described in a conversation that you had with Robert Kraft that you were 100% in.
Well, that was supposed to be a private conversation, but one thing I've certainly learned over, 20 years of playing football is, I can control what I can control.
So here's a couple observations I want to make on that. Brady, I wrote when the team was in Tennessee, is very much taking an approach of, look, I just work here. Don't ask me. Now, over the course of time, whether it's Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers or any number of high-profile quarterbacks, they've been given the opportunity to weigh in on personnel decisions, directions of the team, to a point where they might be as or more important in some cases than the general manager and the head coach. We've seen it innumerable times. Tom Brady has never intimated that he wanted to be beyond that. And even if he had intimated that, the Patriots weren't going to go that way. This one boss, it's Belichick. This one owner, it's Robert Kraft. However, that doesn't mean that Brady doesn't understand the buck will stop with him. And the fact that Antonio Brown is elsewhere, I find it interesting when Brady says, well, maybe if I'm an owner someday, I can make all the decisions I want. And you can really hear it in his voice, too, where he says, I don't make the decisions. I don't get asked about draft. I don't get asked about players. It's kind of a, hey, I just work here. And I wrote while they were in Tennessee that Brady is approaching the season as if he is employee number 12. I come to work, I put my stuff down on my cube, I do what I'm told, and at the end of the day, I leave. Has it ever been differently? I don't know, but I do think that there is an embrace right now by Brady of, if they wanted me, if they wanted my input, they'd come to me. They don't. As a result, I'll just do what they tell me to do. I also felt that mentioning the owner was interesting, as was Brady also mentioning that, for about the third time, that him signing off in Antonio Brown to Robert Kraft was a private conversation that Kraft shared. Kind of another rap with the newspaper to the owner about sharing that conversation. And I also go back to the summer when Brady jokingly said, why don't you ask Mr. Kraft about the contract extension that he was hoping to get? Add all those things up, and I don't think at this juncture Brady is looking at his situation with the Patriots and feeling 100% comfortable with the way things are heading. Look, I'm not saying that there is any kind of a massive rift between the two sides, meaning Brady and Robert Kraft or Jonathan Kraft, but I do think that Brady at times, inevitably, will look at his situation and say, I got an expiring contract that I didn't want. I'm surrounded by players offensively that really aren't going to help me throw the ball. And I'm not sure what my future really brings. So where would an employee look if he had frustrations? He'd look upstairs, whether it be the head coach or the owner. And I think that that dynamic is absolutely going on right now. Now, the Patriots, to be fair, have drafted Isaiah Wynn, N'Keal Harry, and Sony Michel in the last year. That's three offensive players. So while I continue to bang the drum about the fact that he doesn't have anybody to throw to, the team has expended some resources, or a lot of high resources, on the offensive side of the ball. So let's put a bow on that part and now move on to Ryan Russillo's report about whether or not Bill Belichick acted unilaterally in signing Antonio Brown. I'll say this, from the conversations that I have had, my understanding is that Bill Belichick did move quickly on it, and he had a reason to. He moved quickly because he's compelled to move quickly. There was no problem with ownership on the fact that Bill Belichick, if he sees fit and if he knows there's going to be competition for a player, to move quickly. So could he have verbally said to Drew Rosenhaus, as Ryan Russillo said, are we going to get this done? And Bill Belichick said, let's get it done. Now, the idea that Bill Belichick was going to cut a $15 million contract with a $9 million signing bonus without looping in ownership, that's cuckoo. And from my understanding, again, there was unanimity between all sides to release Antonio Brown. And even though the poop hit the fan soon after Antonio Brown came aboard, and it continued to hit the fan with a torrent of tweets on Sunday, the Patriots give great latitude, well-earned over the course of time, to Bill Belichick. And that he used it and it didn't work out in this instance, yeah, it's embarrassing. It's, in some cases, somewhat humiliating. No one wants to be associated with it. But a hint at a giant rift between ownership and Bill Belichick, I don't think it goes to that level. All right, we've got our good friend Matt Castle. Every single Tuesday, we're going to bring him in right now. Watch this. I'm going to dial him up. You're going to get to hear him live. Here we go. Dialing.
Hello.
Hey, it's Tom Curran calling up from Matt Castle.
Tommy Curran.
How's my guy?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I like to get the beginning of our phone call. So
yeah.
We're live
now. It's always a wonderful, wonderful, you know, insight to this wonderful relationship.
It has been a budding relationship. Do you remember me when I was on the beat, like covering?
Yeah, when you just were like, you suck, and how are we going to win any games this year? And I was like, hey, well, you know, hopefully things work out.
I thought that you were really not very good in the 2008 preseason, and I'm sorry.
That's a true statement, you know. You know, I tried to wait and save it all for season.
You did. What was going on that preseason?
You know, good question. You kind of simplify things in the preseason, you know. You know, that's what I blame it on. I don't remember. I do remember rolling out against, I think it was Baltimore, and we're doing like a sprint out pass, and I slipped on my butt for like a 10-yard loss. That was a low point for me. You know, it was one of those things. It's preseason. Come on.
I know.
Get better.
I know. But it's so funny because once Brady got hurt, I went, stop, they are screwed. They are screwed. Did you watch the preseason? And then Matt Castle came in.
But who didn't do that? You know, who didn't do that?
You're right. So now that you're on the other side, how do you like being on the other side of things so far, by the way, before we get to all this stuff relative
to
the Patriots?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's been a lot of fun, actually. I've enjoyed it. It's fun to still be part of the game and talk about it. And, you know, the interesting part is always going in and doing the analysis before the game and the predictions and all the stuff, which the fun part about football is the unpredictability. So you can go in and make as many predictions as you want. And like when I was talking about Antonio Brown, I truly believe that they're going to leave him stationary and like you have a small grouping of plays. And the first time they come break the huddle, Antonio's in the slot and runs an over route, you know, and then he's out there doing this, that, and the other. So it's always interesting when you actually are on that side, on the media side of it, and you're trying to predict maybe this, that, and the other. But the fact of the matter is, until you're actually inside of a building and you go through a game plan and know exactly what you're doing, like all of it is just, you know, the guessing game of it, which is kind of fun. And then the fun part for me is actually watching the game unfold and talking about it afterwards as well.
Well, you've been outstanding on the pregame and postgame live all throughout, and couldn't be happier to have you here on the pod too. And the first thing I wanted to get to with you was at the top of this pod, played a little sound from Tom Brady. You might know him. He was on with Jim Gray, and he mentioned that, look, my job, I am employee number 12. I show up to work. No one asked me who to draft. No one asked me about free agency. Nobody asked me who to sign. And I wonder, as you look around the league, is that unique? Because I know that some quarterbacks do have the latitude to be consulted.
You know what? I think maybe in some organizations, but for, I'd say all the organizations I've been with, that's kind of status quo, to be honest with you. It's a lot of times, you know, they might call you in and ask you, what do you think about a player? They might ask you, have you played with this guy before? What are your thoughts, feelings on him? But at the end of the day, like in terms of signing and doing that kind of stuff, I mean, I've never been around an organization that has come up in the GMs like, do you want this guy? And that's resulted in us either signing him or drafting him or doing something like that. Now, they might ask your opinion about somebody, but like I said, when push comes to shove, those GMs, the coaches, are making that decision more so than the impact and influence of a player.
Tom really wanted Antonio Brown to be here. Doesn't ask for a lot, I've been told, and this was something that he wanted to have happen. I don't know how he felt about the texts that came out. I know that there's reports that he didn't want the team to move on from him. Regardless of all that, can you empathize with his position to have had that kind of a toy as part of his offense for 11 days and then have it pulled away and say, shit, we're
no
really...
doubt.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think you bring up a great point. Anytime you're a quarterback, you know that sometimes you're as good as the guys around you, and those guys make you better. And when you have a dominant player, at the like Antonio Brown that comes in, and you know get a taste of what that creates for your offensive unit. Obviously, you are excited about it. You're energized by it, and you think that you can do some great things. Which obviously they showed that they could within that 1 week of playing together. And at the same time, you know, it's somewhat heartbreaking that all the off-the-field stuff results in the loss of a great player as somebody that could help you on the field. And again, it's nobody's fault, but you know, Antonio's in terms of actually not being on the football field. But yes, it's disappointing and it's frustrating because, you know, everything was right there for those guys to have a great season and everything and build on that first week and do really well. And if it wasn't for the antics and everything else that we've all covered at nauseam, then, you know, he'd still be here and we'd still be having probably some great discussions about what happened this last week with us on the field together.
I mean, it's almost inevitable then, and I can understand how he feels. I think anyone can when you have a coworker who's really good at his job, but now for whatever reason of his own doing, ain't going to be there anymore. It's frustrating.
There's no doubt. And you know, there's the frustrating part is, like you said, when you're inside a locker room and when you start to know a person as a teammate, and even if they've had a troubled past or whatever they've had, it's a different relationship when you're inside the locker room and you're working toward a common goal, right? To win ball games and do all that. So sometimes it's more surface level than anything else. And you don't really know the real person. Maybe don't go get as much insight as to who he is off the field. And the frustrating part for you, for all of us as players, when something like that happens is, you know, it's that part of you that is upset about the wasted talent and the fact that this guy's so good and he doesn't even probably realize how good he is. And that, you know, the frustration level comes in from how can you possibly throw some that talent away, so to speak. And it result in that when you don't, you know, you might not know all the specifics on the outside, but that part does become very frustrating.
Yeah, and your interactions with him, as I'm sure Tom's were, as I'm sure most of his teammates were probably almost 100% positive because he's coming in trying to put his best foot forward. And everybody's welcoming him in. And then you go, well, Jesus, he just went home and sent that text?
Exactly. And it's mind-boggling at times. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that can't relate. Like, I can't relate to it. I don't even have social media or anything like that, which I'm pretty sure that I probably need to get that at some point or another.
No.
Yeah. So I don't have it, and I can't relate to it. And that's sometimes what's even more mind-boggling is that, you know, this is what's got you in trouble, and can you learn from your mistakes? And you've had opportunity after opportunity to redeem those mistakes, but unfortunately, you just can't learn from it. And that's part of the process, too, of trying to absorb what just took place. Like, how in the world can you not recognize that this is an issue?
I feel like we have now put a bow on Antonio Brown, as far as I'm concerned.
I hope so, but let's be honest, we'll have a full segment on it come Sunday.
Well, you and me on the pod, we've put a bow on it.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I love that.
Fair enough. Now, talk to me about dealing with attrition at wide receiver. I asked Tom about it after the game. Holy crap, you go from really talented players, some of the best at their position, including Julian Edelman, and now you turn around and you're like, ooh. How difficult is this week for Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels to cobble something together against a very good Bills defense on the road?
Right. I mean, this is a really good defense. It's a top 10 defense in the multiple categories. And we played them last year in Detroit. And I'll tell you what, when you play that team in Buffalo against that defense is a darn good defense. They create pass rush. You know, Sean McDermott does a great job. The secondary is well coached. They do great with their communication, and they've got some guys that can get after you. And they're also really good against their rush defense is outstanding. And so it's going to be a challenge for sure, and we'll have to see how the week plays out, how Julian is. And I don't know his status right now on the injury report or anything, but he's a key player in this whole deal. You know, Julian has been Tom's go-to guy for the last however many years, and there's obviously a comfort level, and he's also their number one receiver. When you lose a guy like that, you lose a guy like AB within 2 weeks, you go from being one of the most loaded wide receiver groups in the league to now you're starting to sit there and go, ooh, we've got a few issues, and the matchups are different, and the ways in which he's going to have to beat a really good football team are different. And so it's going to be a challenge. And you know what? The thing is also, though, and Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady have been doing this for a really long time. And
they've seen this movie before, right?
They've
seen this. Okay. Well, we don't have anybody.
You even saw it early in the season, right? People are going, well, how are they going to attack them? They don't have any tight ends. They don't do this against against the Steelers defense, which on paper is a really good defense, and they figured it out. You know, they went more two back sets, they went empty, and that's probably not going to change. They're going to find ways to create people to get open. And I remember even going back, and this is way back, but in 2006, well, maybe we weren't the most talented. We had talent at the wide receiver position, but around the league speaking, we right. probably didn't have the same talent level that we did in other years.
No, and I mean, Doug Gabriel, Roche, Troy.
Right, Trey, Jabbar Daphne came in halfway through the year.
Tim Dwight.
And this, and so at times we had to facilitate ways in which we get these guys open, but that's where great coaching comes in, and that's where you create the stacks, the bunches, the different release patterns, in which sometimes lining up over a guy one-on-one saying, I'm going to beat you, is much different when you're saying, okay, we're going to put some traffic in front of you. We're going to do different release patterns. We're going to challenge you with, can you communicate when we get in bunch, when we get into stack, when we motion into a certain formation and make you adjust on the move. And they're one of the best teams at doing that and help these guys that otherwise might have a little bit more difficulty, you know, lining up one-on-one over a guy and saying, I'm going to beat you all day long. Instead, they're going to try to help facilitate that for these guys and get these guys open in different manners.
And that's, I think, to a degree, what we saw happen against the Jets the other day. And then as the game went along and Greg Williams adjusted and the quality, and there is some quality on that Jets defense, started to process what in God's name was going on, you saw it become a little more difficult. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I mean, what was it? The first three series that went down scored.
Touchdown. He was 11 for 13, I think, for $192. And then after that, I think it was for 86.
Exactly. And they also knew that they were going to go up against a very stout run defense. And what did they do the first part of the game as well? They said, you know what? A lot of teams, they stick to a game plan. That's what their personality is. That's what their scheme is. But this is a game plan team. You know what I mean? And they're not going to sit there and say, well, guess what? This is a really good run defense. Let's test their run defense as much as we can early on. No, they're going to say, you know what? We're going to throw the ball every time until we get down there in the red zone on the 5-yard line and we're going to have our first run of the day and it's a walk-in touchdown. You know what I mean? So it's these are smart coaches. This is a smart staff. Brady's been doing it for a long time. And so they're going to find out the best way to attack this team and try to put that product out on the field.
What is the issue in your mind with the running game right now?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the run game and everything like that, they've been more committed to the pass early in the season. They just have been, you know, and the run games, I think part of it that a lot of people don't talk about, everybody talks about Gronkowski as a guy that was an unbelievable mm-hmm. pass-catching tight end and a guy that was the security blanket, this, that, and the other, and he was incredible in the red zone. But a lot of people don't realize what a great blocker he was and how good he was at the point of attack. And, you know, they always talk about these edge rushers and setting the edge in the run game. Well, he was one of the best at eliminating that and creating those holes as well. And there's been, you know, like we know, we've talked about it a lot about the ever-rotating door right now at the offensive line positions. And they're doing, you know, they've had a lot of injuries, a lot of different guys in there with Newhouse and Cunningham and all those guys. And so I'm not making an excuse for it, but I think that they figured out that the best way to attack some of these defenses early on has been throwing the ball. Play action pass has been more prevalent for them, as you can tell, and they've had some really great plays off of it, but they really haven't run the ball as much as they did probably at the later part of the year last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's part of it. And they've also, you know, a lot of historically speaking, they're two tight end sets. They've had the depth at that tight end position to get two tight ends in there and a fullback and run the ball later in the game. With right now, with the way that their personnel has been, they don't have that. Devlin was out last week, which is a big issue for them in terms of setting up 21 run personnel groups. And also, like I said, at the tight end position, they've been down to one tight end for most of the year. And, you know, it's a little bit inconsistent in terms of the run game.
And Dwayne Allen pounded people, too. I mean, Dwayne
right.
Allen was a terrific blocker. That was his forte. So you've lost, since last year, you've lost Dwayne Allen, Rob Gronkowski, and now James Devlin. And you also have Trent Brown has gone elsewhere, and his replacement, who was a very capable replacement, Isaiah Wynn, is gone. It's got to have to take a toll. Do you think, however, that Sony Michel shares it all in some of the issues? Because here, I'm the dummy out here who never blames the running back. almost never.
I mean, it's hard to say. It's not like Sony Michel is like night and day from what he was last year, right? He had an incredible season last year, and nobody's taking that away. And this season, sometimes when you come back and they know that you've had a dominant year, maybe they're more focused on stopping the run and doing those type of things because it hurt them in the past. And if they, or especially early in the season, when you go back and watch the end of the last year, they featured Sony. So they're going to be ready for him coming downhill, doing what they did last year. And so that's also like a little bit of what I'm talking about, that chess match that we just said is, hey, well, if they're expecting that, well, let's play action them, get some big play actions early on. Let's spread them out, throw the ball, keep them off balance and do it that way. And what I really thought was going to, you know, happen, especially when you get up early, you know, New England historically has been one of those teams that come back in the second half, especially when they get the lead, and that's when they wear on you, that's when they lean on you, that's mm-hmm. when you get them tired out, and that's when that run game really starts to become a force. Again, it goes back to, well, what's your personnel, and how are you going to be able to achieve that with a different personnel group than probably what you had last year? And right now, they don't have that answer to how to go down and pound the rock and go inside the tackles and do all the things that they did last year.
When we look at this team and its ability on offense to morph, I think that we always go into a game and say, well, you know, they're going to figure it out. Defensively, they have that same ability to morph. And I think that we've looked at the first couple games here, 43-0, 33-3, 30-0 in terms of allowing defensive points. Is this defense everything that it looks like it is? Because when I look at the versatility of it and the ability of the players at every single level, I don't think that this is a byproduct of beating up on crap teams.
Right. I think you're exactly correct with your statement. I think that this is a defense with tremendous depth across the board. I said this in the broadcast the other day. I was like, their secondary is an experienced secondary. They've been together for a long time. So much of a secondary is the communication that takes place on the back end and understanding, hey, you've got me covered over the top. Hey, I'm going to undercut this, do that. But then you talk about the depth at the linebacker position, the way that Jamie Collins and Hightower and those guys are all playing right now. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible grouping, and the depth's amazing. And then the front the front part of that defensive line has been incredible as well. So they don't have any weaknesses, which is extremely rare, I would say, like where you normally turn on the film and you go, okay, let's go and attack this guy. Mm-hmm. Let's get after him. Let's do this in the pass game or running. You know, they might have limitations in terms of certain runs or whatever, but this is a complete defense. They're playing well together. They're a veteran group. They know they've been doing it for a long time together, and that's part of the battle. And I'm telling you, like, I know that they haven't played, you know, any juggernauts here offensively, in which you're going, gosh, how are we going to match up here? But at the same time, I don't care who you are out there, you're going to have some issues when you line up against that defense in terms of pass protection, in terms of scheme. And like you mentioned prior to this, there's nobody that makes better adjustments at halftime than Bill Belichick. I've been there, and I've seen it with my own two eyes, where you walk in, and at halftime, we might just completely scratch what we were doing in the first half because we're making adjustments and we're going to go a different direction. And it's because we're making those in-game adjustments that need to be made, whether it's for a protection, whether it's for a route concept, and we're going to do it because it's going to give us the best opportunity to win.
The other bizarre thing about this defense is, you know, we looked at the offensive line with Isaiah Wynn at left tackle and said, yeah, you know, there's nobody really behind him. Prior to Antonio Brown getting here, looked at wide receiver and said, it's not a lot of depth there. Knock on wood, but if Dont'a Hightower gets hurt, there's still five more friggin' linebackers.
And that's what I think this team actually has the most depth at, is that linebacker position.
Yeah.
If they can rotate those guys in, if somebody does unfortunately go down with something or get banged up or nicked or something like that, you're not sitting there going, gosh, who's going to go in for this guy? It's like, well, you just the Rolodex is right there. You pick your guy and you put him in and he'll go in. And you're not losing much at that position, if anything, because they have so much depth. And it also gives them so much versatility come third down and the different packages that they can run and the guys that they can substitute in and give you different looks in the sub packages and this, that, and the other. So it's a strong defense. It really is. And it's the best New England defense that I've seen since I've been around.
They don't have to, quote unquote, overplay anybody either. They can I think Van Noy had the high snaps, 100% of them, with 51. Other than that, you know, guys were able to have a 48-snap game, 45, 30. I think that Hightower was in the 30s. So that all has to play into it as well, preserving guys now.
Yeah, and the beautiful part about how they've played recently also is they're on the field and then they're off the field. I mean, we're not talking about these teams holding time of possession and like, wearing them out at all. Like, they've been a ton of three and outs. They're holding teams to, what was it, in Miami, 30-something and odd yards and mm-hmm. through three quarters. Same kind of similar performance last week. So, you know, you're not worried about conditioning. You're not worried about them wearing down. One, they've got the depth to rotate guys in and out. But two, they're not on the field for a ton of time, and that works to their favor because they're fresh and they're feeling good when they're getting back out on the field.
All right. Let's change gears to wrap this thing up. They're playing at Buffalo this week.
Yes.
Did you like going to Buffalo?
I mean, I enjoyed the atmosphere. There's no doubt about it. I loved coming in and them throwing beer cans at your bus and doing that kind of stuff and them yelling at you when you're in the stands and you the stuff that comes out of some of these people's mouth is absolutely incredible. And, you know, it's a great fan base. All they want to do is win. And they're football fans, you know, for the most part, I'd say. You know, they've got a lot of educated fans that know football and love football and want to, you know, want everything. And then the Bills Mafia. I mean, who doesn't love the Bills Mafia? Let's be honest.
Hide the women and children.
Yeah, just beautiful. I just want to, you know, there's times that I have, you know, that impulse to just get the kids in the car and go out there and caravan on a weekend with those guys.
You don't want the kids there? Did you say the kids?
I know. I was joking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I was slow on the uptake. I'm sorry. That was my fault. It's hot. You should see this podcast room we have. I would say it's 10 by 10. And I don't know. The rest of the building is reasonably temperate. And this room is 98 degrees. And I have giant plates under my arms, ruining my dress shirt. It's tough. I'm playing in pain.
Fight through it, Tommy. Fight through it, man.
What was your favorite stadium on the road to play in, and why? Whether it was as a player, for historical purposes, any of that.
You know, Lambeau is, from a historical standpoint, Lambeau, there's no place like it. Just the history behind it. You know, coming down onto the field, the green locker rooms, everything. The smell of bratwurst in the air. The fans, as you're coming into the stadium, waving at you, going, "Oh, we're going to try to kick your ass today," you know. But you know that it's somewhat sarcasm when you're coming in. But it's just an incredible environment and the rich history behind it. If you're a history buff and you love football, there's nothing quite like Lambeau in terms of like playing, in terms of sound and noise. Seattle's one of the most difficult that I've played at. Just when they have it rocking and rolling, and you get out there and you're going, "Ooh." I mean, you can't hear it. It's deafening. You know, so it was that's two places that I'd say are an incredible place to play. But, you know, when you're playing in the NFL, every place that you go is a fun challenge when you're on the road, because it's kind of you against the world mentality. It's you, your teammates, that locker room that are going out. And, you know, you might have support there and this, that, and the other. But the fact of the matter is, it makes for such a fun experience when you go out there, you win on the road, and you play in a hostile environment, and all of a sudden that crowd just goes completely silent when you start rolling a little bit, and that's when it gets a lot of fun.
Softest opposing fan base or quietest, most useless home field advantage in the NFL?
That's a good question. Let me think about this. Miami's Weak. Not that tough to play. I mean, I have to say Miami's
well, it's hot as hell,
sure.
But
it's hot as hell. But let's be honest, like, you can hear yourself and you pretty much can make your calls and go about your day. And there's not a lot going on in terms of like they're just not always present.
How about
especially
Oakland?
As you get going in the season, huh?
Oakland, yeah, they make some noise, right?
Yeah, Oakland makes a little bit of noise, but they're fair weather, let's be honest. I mean, it's one of the worst locker rooms you'll ever be in your entire life. They've got, like, leaking pipes up above you. It's an old baseball locker room is what it is. And the old Qualcomm, the stadium down
that
there in San Diego,
sucked.
Was just as bad. You know, you got the split locker room. It's baseball locker room, and it's just awful. You know, so, I mean, there's some stadiums that you go, "Ugh, this is nasty." But, you know, some of those ones, the newer stadiums, You know, is it MetLife, the New York stadium?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great new stadium. Denver was always one of my favorite places to go to because the locker room's enormous and you've got space and you feel like it's a home game in terms of amenities and stuff like that. As you can sense, you know, I'm, every player kind of goes, oh, if it's nice, you kind of love it. You know, if it sucks, then, you know, there's not a worse opposing thing too than, I mean, going into opposing locker room than when you're actually an opponent in Kansas City. Because it's small, it's tight quarters, everybody's bunched up, and that stadium, when you're an opponent, is just, that fan base is
Buffalo is absolutely insane. Buffalo is also a disaster for a locker room.
It is, and they actually made improvements for that locker room, shockingly.
Well, the worst part
still
is,
a disaster.
We're stumbling around with our friggin' tape recorders in our hand. You guys are in states of undress, walking past us with your towels on, your equipment bags are on the floor, there's tape flying around.
Oh, yeah.
We want to give you your room. We don't know who's going to talk. Nothing but, you know, elbows and asses.
Some of those you walk in, you're just like, how do I get anything done?
Right.
And then you, no matter what, it's not like you can move around and give us any space because there is no space.
Awkward as shit. It's awkward as hell.
It always is.
Well, on that note, I think that you and I can call it a week here. Don't you?
It's been a pleasure as always.
All right, you crazy man. I enjoy you, and I will see you on Sunday for pregame live and postgame live as the Patriots take on the Bills. Matt Castle, see ya. All right, so there you have it. Matt Castle, just another tremendous visit from our friend. And as I said, pregame live, postgame live on Sunday. Phil Perry will be out there on the road checking out Bills Mafia, so join us for that. And, of course, throughout the week, we got Patriots Wednesday coming up on Wednesday. Phil's got football fix. We're going to have all the coverage that you need on NBCSportsBoston.com. Subscribe if you haven't already. Or, please, put a review up here for us, will you? Okay? Enjoyed it. Enjoy yourselves. Talk to you soon.